This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. From a certain point of view, each day offers fresh opportunities to read a short story. Waiting at the gate at O'Hare, riding Marta from Buckhead into downtown Atlanta, or taking in the air on Mission Beach in San Diego. Short stories would seem to be a literary form for our times. They are, after all, short. They open a new world, summarize and close it for us, all within 20 pages, more or less. So why don't more Americans actually read short stories? This does not daunt publishers from bringing out collections. Sue Miller is a novelist, the author of While I Was Gone and, most recently, The World Below. She is also this year's guest editor of The Best American Short Stories, now in its 87th year. She joins us now from the studios of member station WBUR in Boston. Thanks very much for being with us.
I'm delighted to be here.
And I may ask, am I wrong in that premise? Is the short story not the major form of entertainment it used to be in this country?
It's not. And I, you know, it's puzzling as to why that should be so. But, you know, it's sort of famously the case that if you, you know, write a collection of short stories, everyone asks you, or if you have short stories you're trying to sell as a writer, everyone asks you, well, are you working on a novel? They want to know whether or not you're actually going to write something they can sell in any number at all before they know whether they're going to be interested in your shorter work, too, because they simply don't sell as a rule.
Now,
anyway.
Is this partially because, well, we used to have magazines where the principal medium
I think that's right. I mean, people sort of learned how to read them in magazines which were available. I mean, there used to be a lot of magazines which published the short story and were sold in the drugstore, and you know, anyone could read them, and people did, and people knew how to read short stories.
Mm-hmm. So what for this collection, what did you read through? What were the sources?
The Uber editor, whose name is Katrina Kennison, who chooses the pile from which the editor each year makes her selection or his selection, reads, I think, 2,000 stories, and she has subscriptions to every magazine which publishes short stories you could imagine. I mean, she says her house is just heaped with these various, you know, literary magazines and then also, you know, things, magazines like The New Yorker and The Atlantic and so forth. But she reads ceaselessly, widely, and deeply. And from those, she selects about 150 to forward on to the editor of the year, which was me.
And what do you look for in a short story?
Well, I think I look simply to be sort of surprised and amazed by it and to sort of feel that it's not familiar. Sometimes it's enough that it takes an astonishing turn at the very end that makes a different kind of sense of everything else I've read up to that moment. But I'd like to have my breath taken away in some way or another by it, I think. Sometimes simply by the beauty of the prose. This is the case in, you know, one of the stories in this collection.
Could you read something to us that particularly caught your eye in this collection?
Let's see. A beautifully written scene from a story by Carolyn Cook called The Sugar Tit. The characters are Jack, who's an unfaithful husband. This all takes place among sort of gentry on Beacon Hill in the 50s or so. And Giddy, the wife to whom he's unfaithful. Paula is the married woman in whose house they are guests at a party, who's his mistress. Jack drifted away from her and landed near a low table of canapés, deviled eggs, stuffed celery, and olives. His liquid tenor rode above the rest of the men's voices in the quivery way of oil on water. He went on about the crayon business. Why did he go on? No one asked to hear it. About all the pigments and vats, the problem of shipping, about the ship that would take the crayons to the little children in England. Giddy sipped her drink and listened to him become enthusiastic to the high sound of his implacable happiness. Did it sound to Paula like happiness? There he was, in a circle of men, his face rosy and his blue eyes hard. His glasses glittered. He pulled out his handkerchief and honked into it. Since she could remember, Giddy had washed out handkerchiefs full of stuff from men's noses. First her father's nose, then Jack's.
We should explain again. Carolyn Cook, The Sugar Tit, and that's from the Agni Review.
Right. And that's a local Boston literary magazine, actually.
Yeah, with which I must say I was not familiar. Have you noticed, as you went through all these stories, that there is a predominant form for the short story, or is there great variety?
Well, I think there's at a certain point in the history of the short story in America, there was a definable, let's say, New Yorker short story, and there was a sort of definable moment when you could, when people were writing what was called the minimalist short story, or the Raymond Carver-esque short story. There were sort of certain eras in the development of the short story, particularly in the second half of the 20th century. And it seems to me that now there isn't a kind of sense of a sort of most popular form for the short story. But on the other hand, there's not an enormous amount of experimentation with it either. I think I saw maybe out of the 150 or so stories that I read, two that were experimental in style. Most of these stories are fairly traditional in a certain sense.
On the other hand, traditional is not the same as pallid or imitative, because these are... These are at the same time very strong stories. Can I read something to you?
Yes.
Jill McCorkle's wonderful opening for her story, Billy Goats. We used to all come outside when the streetlights came on and prowl the neighborhood in a pack, a herd of kids on banana seat bikes and mini bikes. The grown-ups looked so silly, framed in their living room and kitchen windows. They complained about their days and sighed deep sighs of depression and loss. They talked about how spoiled and lucky children are these days. We will never be that way, we said. We will never say those things. We popped wheelies in pursuit of the mosquito truck, which was a guarantee on humid summer nights. We rode behind the big gray truck, our laughter and screams lost in the grinding whir of machinery, our vision blurred by the cloud of poison. We were lightheaded as we cruised our town, the dark, deserted playground of the elementary school, the fluorescent-lit gas stations out on the service road of the interstate that scarred the rural landscape, past the run-down apartment complex where transient military families lived, past houses that were identified by histories of death, divorce, disaster. Boy, you're there.
Yeah. And I actually, I love that story for a couple of, I mean, I love the prose in it, and I love that description of childhood. I also admire the sort of chutzpah it took to write a story in the first person plural, we, although it does break away and become I. And I'd like to read just the very end of it, if I could, because that's something I admire. After, it's sort of really about the death and divorce and disasters that happen to people in a way, and about the inevitability of those things in everyone's life. And then it closes in this way. I would call the people I knew growing up who have since died. I would ask how life had taken them there. Did they beg or did they pass in silence? Did they embrace life or reject it? Were there memories that at the very last minute filled their minds and swaddled their fears? And like a director, I would call for lights to come on in every house in town and for every person who had ever lived there to step outside and take a long, deep breath on this average summer night.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Sue Miller is the guest editor of the Best American Short Stories, 2002. She is also an author, most recently of The World Below. Ms. Miller, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.